the heartfelt comments on a reduction will be even more heartfelt and challenging if it goes to zero.
Governor Walker urges lawmakers to pass a permanent fund restructure plan. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, June 15th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the long-running debate over the Tongass Timber Plan.
And to have the carpet pulled out from under us from our senator when we're trying to work together is disappointing.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka encourages rural Alaska high school students to apply to be part of their 70-year legacy. Mount Edgecombe High School provides a curriculum rich in culture and diversity, offering over 80 courses, from art to advanced engineering, and with activities from native dance to kayaking. Class sizes are no larger than 30. Explore your talents and develop your dreams. Apply online at mehs.us. This message sponsored by Mount Edgecombe High School.
Three people have died and six more were injured after a passenger van rolled over in Atka last night. Alaska State Troopers say they learned of the single vehicle crash just after 6 p.m. yesterday. The people involved in the accident are employees of Atka Pride Seafood, which is a subsidiary of the Aleutian Pribilof Island Community Development Association, or APICTA. APICTA's Ellen Kersnick says the accident occurred when they were traveling from the processing plant to the bunkhouse for dinner. The Coast Guard transported several of the injured parties to Anchorage. Megan Peters with the Alaska State Troopers says troopers will be in the village today to investigate. In addition to the troopers, members of APICTA's behavioral health team are headed to Atka to provide grief counseling services. Names of the injured and deceased are being held until families can be notified. At a press conference in Juneau today, Governor Bill Walker said he understands the position of legislators who are hearing from constituents opposed to cuts to permanent fund dividends.
I share with them the struggle that they found themselves in. I found myself in exactly the same struggle. And when I looked at the options available to us, there were no other options.
No options, he noted, other than legislation that would draw roughly $2 billion annually from permanent fund earnings to pay for the state government budget. This would close most of the deficit, which is more than $3 billion. Walker has been talking with House members about Senate Bill 128 that would use a portion of permanent fund earnings in looking for a compromise that would meet his goal of providing a sustainable source of state funding. But many Alaskans aren't happy with the concept. House Finance Committee members heard an earful from residents who don't want cuts during public testimony yesterday. Metlakatla resident Brittany Christensen said she doesn't understand why she's facing a potential $1,000 dividend cut.
I do not want it to be taken away, half of it, because, you know, of course I was planning a trip, but, you know, I was wondering why are they cutting people's PFCs?
Walker predicts lawmakers will feel even more heat from constituents if they don't act. That's because continued deficits would exhaust state savings and end dividends.
We don't make any changes associated with the permanent fund. The heartfelt comments on a reduction will be even more heartfelt and challenging if it goes to zero. And that's what we're trying to prevent it from happening.
A combination of minority caucus Democrats and conservative Republicans have expressed the deepest reservations over the bill. One Democrat, Anchorage Representative Les Guerra, says he'd like to see a bill, perhaps with a smaller dividend reduction this year. He would have preferred that the state first cut oil and gas tax credits deeper.
I see a devastating dividend cut and a devastating bad plan coming out if there is no compromise.
The House Finance Committee may vote as soon as tomorrow after members spent today huddled in small groups and one-on-one meetings discussing the bill. The legislature special session is scheduled to end next Tuesday, but Walker suggested he would call them back if they don't pass the bill. The State Board of Education met this morning to interview two candidates for Alaska's top education post. Up for consideration are two superintendents from rural districts, Michael Johnson of the Copper River School District and Stuart McDonald of the Kodiak Island Borough School District. The board will take public comments on the candidates tomorrow. According to a department spokesperson, the board will run its tentative selection past Governor Walker to get his approval before it announces an official appointment on Friday afternoon. Two other candidates had been named as finalists, but Interim Education Commissioner Susan McCauley and Robert Boyle of Ketchikan both withdrew their applications in recent weeks. The commissioner job came open when former Commissioner Mike Hanley was asked to resign in February. The Forest Service has a plan for the Tongass National Forest that would shift loggers away from the harvest of old-growth trees and offer the industry young trees instead. At the U.S. Capitol this week, Senator Lisa Murkowski and Congressman Don Young are working on separate bills to block the plan, APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
In the House Resources Committee, Representative Young said the plan doesn't help the forest or the industry because he says there's no money in harvesting immature trees.
Can you imagine killing all your kids? That's what they're doing. That's really what they're doing, and keeping the old people alive.
The committee approved Young's measure, which would require a full inventory of young growth timber before the Forest Service could launch its plan. That's not likely to occur before time runs out on the Obama administration. Murkowski also wants a Tongass timber inventory in hand before the transition starts. She included the requirement in a spending bill that funds the Forest Service. Murkowski says the pace of the planned transition is unrealistic.
What I believe the inventory will show is that the transition is just going to take longer. Because we cannot legislate a tree to grow faster.
Andrew Tomes, director of the Sitka Conservation Society, says the lawmakers' actions are disheartening. Tomes served on the Tongass Advisory Committee that helped craft the transition plan, along with timber industry representatives.
You know, I would hope that the senator would have seen that people from Alaska worked together and wanted to turn the page away from the divisiveness and the conflict of the past and move to a future where we are all working together and finding solutions. And to have the carpet pulled out from under us from our senator when we're trying to work together is disappointing.
Tomes says the industry has to adapt to changes in the market and in the forest because, he says, the economically viable old growth has already been cut. Young's bill, which would also allow states to acquire millions of acres of national forest, heads next to the House floor. Murkowski's spending bill is likely to clear the Appropriations Committee this week. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new plan in Fairbanks to help those struggling with addiction.
The DEA agent in charge of our area, he said, I have never seen heroin so bad in anywhere he's been, specifically talking about Alaska and Fairbanks.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, fueling philanthropic programs dedicated to creating educational and professional opportunities for Alaska Native people. And by
GCI, serving more than 100 Alaska communities. GCI's Alaska Born and Raised campaign celebrates the people who call Alaska home. GCI.com/share your story.
388 scientists sent a letter to President Barack Obama today asking for an end to offshore lease sales in the Arctic. The U.S. Department of the Interior is considering leasing areas in the Beaufort and Chukchi Sea for offshore drilling. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story.
More than 30 scientists from Alaska signed the letter. Ujani Yuskrikin, an associate research professor at the University of Fairbanks, says most of her colleagues are opposed to the lease sale. Yuskrikin studies the effects of climate change in the Arctic and worries if drilling occurs, a crisis could follow.
First of all, it upsets the ecosystem that's already very fragile. And second of all, if there's a disaster or a spill or any sort of problem, the oil companies do not seem like they're very well ready to handle any such problem.
There hasn't been a lease sale in Alaska since 2008. Last year, the Department of the Interior canceled the current lease cycle after Shell decided to halt exploratory drilling. The company cited disappointing results and lack of industry interest. Josh Kindred of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association says even though oil prices are low now, that could change. He thinks getting rid of the lease sale altogether could bar the U.S. from drilling in the Arctic forever.
You know, at the end of the day, you know, we don't know where we're going to be as a nation from an energy standpoint 5 years from now. And so foreclosing this opportunity prematurely, particularly when we're still afforded that opportunity 4 or 5 years from now to simply have BOEM pull those lease sales seems like poor policy.
BOEM is the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. The Bureau's public comment period for the 2017 to 2020 plans ends Thursday. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
Anchorage Pride Fest will have increased security this year and will include memorials for the victims of Sunday's mass shooting at a gay nightclub in Orlando. Anchorage's annual Pride Fest celebrates the local lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. But this year, the celebration is tinged with both sadness and wariness. Drew Phoenix, the director of Identity Inc., says he's spoken with the Anchorage Police Department, the mayor's office, and the FBI about increased security during the 8-day-long event.
We are putting safeguards into place and letting people know that all of these agencies take it very seriously. They support us. They're with us. And throughout Pride Fest week, and particularly on the 25th, there will be extra law enforcement officers providing safety.
June 25th is the Pride Parade and Festival in downtown Anchorage. Phoenix says the shooting in Orlando increases his concerns about the community's safety.
Because you think, nothing's going to happen here in Anchorage, but I'm sure all of our LGBT family and friends in Orlando thought the same. Who would ever think that anybody would do something horrific like that? So I take that very seriously as one of our LGBT leaders.
Phoenix says they've also added multiple memorials and moments of silence to the week's events to commemorate the victims. But he says honoring the victims is about more than remembering them. It's about taking action to promote the safety of all LGBT communities by creating statewide protections. Pride Fest runs from June 18th to the 25th. Educators in Quigillenock are preparing their students for bright educational futures in both English and Yupik. They're part of a nationwide expansion of dual language programs where kids learn in two languages at the same time. And in Quigillenock, it's working. Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman has more.
Most of the students have already arrived at the rural Quigillenock School by foot, bike, or four-wheeler when Principal Megan Rosendahl's voice booms out of the intercom. She welcomes them by their school mascot name.
Good morning, Eagles! The language of the day is Yupken!
That means when students are in the halls or at recess, they're supposed to speak to each other only in the Yupik language. That applies to all of the students, kindergarten through 12th grade. First grader Chloe Lewis tries her best as she pulls on her jacket and heads out to the playground. She starts reciting her most recent science lesson.
The anchor is Denisic.
She rushes out with her friend Issei Gurak, and they figure out who will be it in the game of freeze tag.
Pink, you stink. Your turn, number for the Chloe, you are out.
Despite the day's language rules, as they zip around the playground, Chloe and some of her friends default to using English. Chloe grew up speaking mostly English at home. Others grew up using mostly Yupik. But in school, they're all required to use both. Some subjects are taught in English, others in Yupik. Chloe says sometimes it's a struggle.
A little bit hard because sometimes I don't know how to speak in Yupik.
So you're still learning.
Yeah.
Is it fun to learn?
Yes.
Longtime Quigillenock teacher Karen Paul says it didn't used to be this way. When she went through school more than 30 years ago, and when she started teaching, students only used Yupik through the third grade.
We had all Yupik teachers, and we taught them all in Yupik, the reading, writing, social studies, science, and math.
Then the Lower Kuskokwim School District changed courses. Math had to be taught in English.
I didn't really agree with it, but we had no choice.
Paul says the district experimented with a few different models, adding an extra year to transition from UPIC to English, trying to teach English in phases. But 6 years ago, they started a new program, dual language.
Dual language teaches both UPIC and English, and at first, again, I didn't like it because I thought the students would lose UPIC language.
But now, Paul has changed her mind. Test scores show that kids in Quigillinock are reading and writing in UPIC better than ever before. Gail Miller was the director of academic programs and curriculum at the Lower Kuskokwim School District when they chose to transition from teaching only in UPIC through the third grade to using the dual language model. She says the district made the change because students were leaving school without being fully proficient in either language. Switching from teaching in only UPIC to only English was
throwing them off the language cliff.
Adding the extra transition year didn't help. Miller says they consulted with the communities in their district and learned that most people did want their kids to be proficient in both languages. So the district began researching different dual language teaching models and eventually settled on a method that was successful in Texas, where it was designed to help primarily Spanish-speaking communities.
Their population was similar to ours. People who were low socioeconomic students, people who were transitioning from one language to the other and did not have proficiency in either language.
It includes starting kids off learning language arts in their strongest language, then eventually teaching that lesson in both. Math is always in English. Science and social studies are always in UPIC. The students got a solid bilingual base all the way through the fifth grade, and teaching methods are more interactive. Miller says, so far, the district is seeing mixed results.
We have seen improvements in some schools, not in all schools, which was a surprise to us because we made a concerted effort to monitor the implementation and encourage really strong implementation.
Miller says it comes down to school and staff engagement. The schools that are really excited about the model are doing better. She says they will continue providing training to staff and improving their UPIC language teaching materials to help all of the schools. Back in Quigillinock, 6-year-old Chloe says she likes getting to use both languages at school.
How do you decide which one you want to use?
Just by using my brain.
The dual language program gets Chloe thinking in UPIC and English, which is exactly what it's supposed to do. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Ann Hillman.
Wrangell residents were shown design options for the former Wrangell Institute property on Monday evening. The community also got its first look at plans for a possible 400-bed boarding school. KSTK's Aaron Bolton has more.
About 40 people gathered in Wrangell's Nolan Center Monday to see three possible designs for the 134-acre Wrangell Institute property and a presentation on a possible boarding school for underserved Native children. The former Wrangell Institute was demolished about 15 years ago and had a long history of abuse accusations. The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, or ANSEP, is an accelerated learning program based on the University of Alaska Anchorage campus. ANSEP Vice Provost and founder Herb Schroeder presented the possibility of building the school on the property. The Wrangell School would be the program's first boarding facility. Schroeder said he received a good response after the presentation.
Questions are typical questions, concerned community about how it was going to work, but I haven't heard a single negative comment all night about building the school here. And I'm excited about the potential, and together with the community of Wrangell, we're going to change education in the state of Alaska.
Schroeder told the community the program serves 2,000 students currently. They range from fifth grade all the way to PhD students. He said the boarding school would aim to serve rural Native children who don't have many educational opportunities, but would also be open to all students who apply. The firm in charge of the project, Corvus Design, included ANSEP in all three master plans. Chris Myrtle is a landscape architect for Corvus and says comments left on the plans supported the idea of ANSEP, but overall, they came into a three-way tie.
There was definitely a desire to have a
variety of mixed housing types for single family. Some lots larger than an acre, some smaller than an acre, and then there's also a lot of support for cottage housing, which are smaller houses around the 600 to 800 square foot, where they shared a lot of common facilities, whether it be open space and parking. And those would be great opportunities for the community for first-time home owners or even rental opportunities for seasonal.
Myrtle says not all the plans had full support. There was some division on where to place a senior assisted living facility.
Some people wanted it up high where it was quiet in the woods. Other people wanted it a little closer to the road where there was more activity. So I think most of our direction has been pretty clear. I think the senior assisted housing, though, would be the one that perhaps the community is most divided on.
Tribal Administrator for the Wrangell Cooperative Association, Aaron Angerman, says he would rather have the senior building closer to the road so it could be developed sooner.
So it seems to me that we don't want to phase that assisted living too far back in the subdivision. I like number two. It's right up front. I think the seniors would love that view right there at the harbor and the bay. So that got my vote.
The proposed designs also include retail space, a gym, bike paths, and green space. Borough Manager Jeff J. Bush said in earlier interviews that funding for the projects on the property would largely depend on partnerships with other organizations. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The University of Alaska Southeast specializes in you. UAS is a learning community where your professors are mentors and friends on campus and online. UAS.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast. Support for Alaska Public Media's Energy News Desk comes from Bettesworth North, Architects and Planners, and the Atwood Foundation.
Cuts in spending are forcing reductions in state services. Alaska's Department of Natural Resources saw more than $500,000 slashed from its budget heading into this fiscal year, and some state parks are suffering because of it. Now, four sites near Valdez are set to join a growing list of Alaska parks under private management. Alaska Public Media's Graylin Brashear has more.
When the Department of Natural Resources found itself facing down big budget cuts last year, Alaska's state park system had to make some tough choices: spread the pain around or quit funding a couple specific areas. Officials chose the latter, and Sitka and Valdez area parks drew short straws. Parks there were put into passive management, which means outhouses were boarded up and staff laid off. DNR spokeswoman Claire LeClaire said it was unavoidable.
We couldn't absorb the level of cuts that we had in FY16 without reducing the level of services somewhere.
In Sitka, some of those services were restored when the National Park System stepped up to take over management of sites. But the solution for Valdez was to look for private outside management. Enter Levitation 49, a new nonprofit sports commission.
You can talk to people all over the state who kind of get misty-eyed and everything when you mention Valdez because it's just so beautiful.
That's Levitation 49 co-founder Lee Hart. She says the group is finalizing an agreement with the state to take over management of the Blueberry Lake campground, cabin sites, and recreation areas near the Prince William Sound port town. Hart says it fits with the group's mission to make Valdez a year-round outdoor recreation hub. And she says people there are enthusiastic about having a local group assume control.
Our community values these assets, and they are cheering for us to take them over and do the same or better job of maintaining them.
LeClaire says she can't confirm details of the arrangement yet, but she says the private management of public parks in Alaska is nothing new. Two dozen parks around the state are currently run by outside groups or for-profit companies.
We don't just write on a napkin, you know, here's your agreement. You know, we have conditions and stipulations. So far, they've worked very well.
One stipulation: private groups must keep fees comparable to other state-run parks. Hart says her group hopes its management in Valdez will serve as a model for keeping public lands open in a time of shrinking budgets.
This is a statewide issue. What's happening here is happening in some other communities, and it's probably in the foreseeable future not going to get that much better. So we have to look at this from a statewide perspective and figure out how much do the residents of this state value public lands. Are there mechanisms to better support them financially? And what are those, and how do we make it happen?
Levitation 49 has other public-private partnerships in the works. Hart says the group has a grant from the National Park Service to plan trails along the Richardson Highway and is a partner on the Trans-Alaska Trail Project. In Anchorage, I'm Graylin Brashear.
Those with heroin and opioid addictions will have an easier time seeking treatment in the future. Monday, the Fairbanks City Mayor and Police Chief were joined by social service and counseling representatives to announce a new initiative. As KUAC's Robert Hannon reports, the approach to tackling addiction follows a national trend.
In his remarks Monday, Chief Aragon said about 18 months ago, a new model of responding to heroin and opioid addiction was brought to his attention. The program has police direct addicts who want to get clean to an advocate who in turn helps find appropriate treatment. And Aragon says about the same time he also learned how serious the addiction numbers were in Fairbanks.
The DEA agent in charge of our area, Drug Enforcement Agency, Alan Wilson, he was in a meeting and he told me, he said, I have never seen heroin so bad in anywhere he's been, specifically talking about Alaska and Fairbanks.
Aragon says there are several hundred people suffering from opioid addiction in the Fairbanks area. He also credits Gunnar Ebbeson as the program's brainchild. Ebbeson's clinical director at Turning Point Counseling Services in Fairbanks and a member of the State Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. He says the fledgling program called the Golden Heart Access to Treatment Initiative needs a lot of work.
We need to be thinking about sustainability. Anything in this political climate, if you don't have a way to sustain a program, you just might as well not even apply.
Ebbeson says the initiative targets those who willingly approach the police for help, not those caught in dealing drugs. In the next couple of weeks, he'll be working with others to form a task force and then start looking for buy-in and funding from local agencies and granting institutions. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. And you can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zoe Sobel in Unalaska, Andrew Kitchenman and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Ann Hillman and Graylin Brashear in Anchorage, Aaron Bolton in Wrangell, and Robert Hannon in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
The Business Administration program at Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive education grounded in real-world experience with life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. Move forward with APU and apply today at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU. The Resource Basket is a training and technical assistance center helping rural communities support healthy, resilient, and culturally connected youth. Tribes and youth-serving organizations can request support, explore resources, and find opportunities at resourcebasket.org or call the team directly at 1-800-478-7227, extension 7396. This message sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program. Boating accidents happen even to experienced boaters and even on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make your friends and loved ones promise to always wear a life jacket and carry emergency communication and distress signaling devices. Visit pledgetolive.org where you can file a float plan, get marine weather forecasts, and download a pre-departure checklist. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.